Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lincioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lincioni, joined by the full crew today. We got Bo, Cody, and Tracy in the house. How's it going, guys?
Fantastic.
Fabulous.
I'm actually kind of grumpy, but that's okay.
All right. Should we? Today's topic is going to be, why is Cody grumpy? Cody, tell us about that. No, we won't do that. Although, heck, it might come up. We got Matthew behind the glass, Karen sitting here next to me. Cody, what is today's topic?
Beware of the novel, easy, and immediate.
You know something? Before we get into this, I just want to say this. All of us go to work and we're sometimes grumpy. And if we don't acknowledge that, today we had a meeting and Cody said, hey, Bo, I want you to lead the meeting because I'm grumpy. And that's something, and Matt came into a meeting and said, hey, if I seem a little off, something just happened. I was on a phone call and I'm kind of in a bad mood. It is good to bring that to work so people know that. It allows us to give them grace and everything else. And I'm just going to ask you this, Cody. Do you know why you're grumpy, or is it hard to get your hands around it?
No, I know. I fell asleep on the couch last night, Pat. I call it a napetizer. That's where you get a nap in right before you go to bed, and then you don't sleep the rest of the evening. So just tired, general grumpiness.
Got it. Well, I will share a story. I fell asleep the other night on the couch, woke up at like, I don't know, 2 a.m, went upstairs in a stupor, got in bed. I have a CPAP machine. I'm not too proud to admit it. And I put it on and I woke up at 6:30 a.m. and realized it wasn't plugged in. So I had this mask on my face. It was pumping no air into me, which meant I slept even worse. And that's enough to be a little grumpy about, but all right. Thanks for sharing that, Cody.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was our title again?
Beware of the novel, easy, and immediate.
Right. Okay. So this is what we were talking about today. It is fascinating to me and to us that so many times in life, the solutions to the problems that we have are really simple. And yet we will overlook them, or we'll search someplace else for them. And we're constantly disregarding the things that we know will work and that are important, because we're either looking for something that's novel and like kind of cool and sophisticated or impressive, or we're looking for something that is easy. And what we mean is it's comfortable and it's predictable and it's not messy, or we're looking for something that's immediate, that'll give us overnight relief. And very, very rarely in life, it's the novel, easy, or immediate solutions that work. And so we just want to talk about other parts of life where we experience this, why we do this, and then apply it to organizations and to our personal development. So what's a good example, Bo, of some place where we do this?
When you teed this up, the first things, of course, that come to mind are health-related. It's like, how many times have we been hoodwinked or attracted to, at least, to the idea that health is something that you can do in 8 minutes a day, or if you just take this supplement, or we've made workouts really easy for you, or the easy way to lose weight. It's so easy to get suckered into that, where we all know drinking lots of water, sleeping 8 hours a day, exercising, burning more calories than you're... It's not that complicated. It's just hard.
Right. And that's where fads come in. Everybody has the latest fad and the latest thing you got to buy. And usually, like, we have a Peloton machine at home. We hang clothes on it between the laundry room and the closet. And then we look at it and we go, oh, look at those funny shoes we purchased that went with that, that sit in the corner every day. Which is not to say that some people don't benefit from it, but how often do we get caught up? But we also have a Pilates machine that we stack books on in the garage. That's a good one too.
Yeah. Well, and I think the health is the perfect analogy, because I remember my grandpa, before he passed away, somebody was talking about a new diet they were on in front of him. He was, you know, he was in a ripe age at that point, and he just said, well, that's idiotic. You should just exercise more and eat less. You know, like, and the truth is in that moment, that sounds harsh, but we all know that's true. And instead we'll buy a Pilates machine and a cold, you know, a cold plunge pool and a sauna, all to try to do it in a hack way versus just doing it the right way.
And if we're doing all the basics and we add that to the regimen, that's one thing. But when we do that thinking, maybe this is going to do it, and we're ignoring the simple part, it just doesn't.
I really like that you use the word beware, because in my experience, sometimes little things help jumpstart you to be able to do the hard thing. A good example for me with that is reading. I know that I should read every night and not watch TV. I want to be a person who's read more books. And sometimes you pick up Les Miserables and you're like, oh, I'm not going to get through that. You need to start with something that's a little easier to jumpstart me into being a person that has the habit of reading. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Pick a short book that's interesting that you're going to get through and you can go, yes, I can be a reader. As opposed to, it's like, I want to read the Bible more. I'm going to start at the beginning. And when I get to Numbers, I will probably not pick this up again. And so sometimes we got to do it and make it so it's doable. That doesn't mean it's easy, but we might give ourselves a chance to succeed.
Pat, I wonder if there's something behind this idea of, you've talked about before, the sophistication bias. That we're a little biased towards things that sound sophisticated. Do you think that's connected to this idea, first of all? And could you unpack that a little bit?
Absolutely. Things that are novel, we're drawn to because it's like, ooh, that's cool. And that's why there are new fads that come and go all the time. I think about the diet thing. You know, I remember in Atkins, everybody was doing Atkins. And then they were doing the keto diet, is that one? And then the paleo diet. And then there's all these crazy things that people do. And by the way, all of them have their merits. But why is it that we need to fully adopt the latest thing rather than do the old moderation, smaller portions, and everything else? And I think it's because that's boring. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes, and Matt was debating with us, is it boring or is it pride where we want things to be kind of cool and new and say, I'm doing that new thing? Whatever it is, it prevents us from embracing the simple, tried and true.
I think the simple, tried and true is also difficult. I think that's the piece that we're leaving out. It's discipline. And I think people just don't, discipline is hard.
Yes. And the idea that I could eat peanut butter and bacon and a bunch of other things as much as I wanted and still lose weight, that doesn't seem hard. And so it's like, that's going to be great. And then your doctor says, well, you've lost some weight, but now you have a different problem because nobody's meant to eat peanut butter and bacon all day long. Mm. So yeah, sometimes it's just hard.
And I think there's this other idea related to this, which is that consistency is more important than intensity. You know, we often think like, oh, I'll go on a juice. You know, I was on the juice cleanse. Well, it would have just been better for me to just eat in moderation and work out every day versus 3 days of a juice cleanse that then I will undo in the subsequent 48 hours once it's done, you know? And the whole like idea of doing something consistent, and we talk about this as it relates to business and organizational health, right? Is like you repeat these behaviors over and over again, and the consistency is the thing that shapes the culture, not the intensity of it.
Yes, but we want it to be immediate. I can't believe I'm going to say this on the air, but the other day I took a shower and I got out and I was talking to my wife and I said, oh, wait a second, I have to go do something. She goes, where are you going? I said, I just took a shower, but it was warm. I've been meaning to take cold showers. So I went back in and I took a cold shower. Like that particular shower was going to make the difference for me. I thought maybe tonight I'll feel so much better because of that cold shower. And some of that's good. Karen just wrote a note and she said, sustainable is rarely sexy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, what do you do? Well, I do the same thing every day. And it's like, oh, that's no good. Tell me what took 2 days and it's going to change you for the rest of your life. And the answer to that question is nothing. Pretty much nothing.
You know, the other word I'm thinking about that's related to this is instead of beware, you might also say delay. Like there, almost everything in life gets better when you delay immediate gratification. Like that, it's just such a simple thing to be like, okay, if I just wait 15 minutes to eat those Oreos that I wanted to eat or wait 15, there's power in saying, okay, that might not be all bad, but I bet I could just delay it. I bet I could wait a little bit longer. Does that resonate with you?
It definitely resonates with me. The idea that I think too often we think about it, the result of it, you know, and this might get a little too philosophical, but it's like, if I once asked a friend, hey, if you could take a pill and have a 6-pack abs and big muscles, but none of the health related benefits, would you still do it? And it's not just about the health benefits or the delayed satisfaction around not eating those Oreos. It's about who you become in the process of doing that. You know, it's like, you don't want to just be the person that has the muscles. You actually want to become the person who is disciplined enough to eat healthy and exercise regularly, that's just as important as the result.
Yeah.
Right. If you imagine if you were leading a company and you said, hey, we want to be a great company. We could just install this software and then 2 days from now, everybody would think we were the best company in the world because of this software. And the thing is, but did you go through the process of getting there? Is it really embedded in your culture and are you proud of it? And you're right. I think at the end of the day, if anything comes too easy, we don't really value it. And mm-hmm. I don't know that it actually gives us the kind of lasting self-impression that we want to have. And yet we keep swinging for the fences every time.
I love the three words. You guys titled the podcast before I jumped on. And I think we've covered that. I love the easy one and we've covered the immediate one. But the novel one is sort of interesting, right? To say, oh, hey, so tell me why you chose the word novel as part of the title. Because I think we've honed in on the other two and why we should beware of those. But what about novel?
Yeah, you know, we think we really debated this because we were going to call it impressive. And because we thought, or popular. It's like, I think people like to be trendy. And they like, if everybody's talking about something, they want to know, yeah, I got that. I'm doing that too. And it's rarely that if something's popular and impressive and novel or intellectually like, ooh, you're cool or cool. That's rarely the solution that works. So you got to beware of that. It's like, well, everybody else is doing this right now. And it's probably a function of everybody else doing something that they hope is immediate and easy as well. So that's why we called it novel, because people are drawn to things that seem trendy.
And I think the question would be, are you doing it because it's novel or are you doing it because it works?
Right. Mm-hmm. And pride plays into this. And in fact, I think Karen was the one saying, I think it's arrogance. I think it's really arrogance, but that seems a little too, you know, condemning. I think we all are susceptible to this. I want to look like I'm cool. That's rooted in pride and arrogance, but even with good intentions, we're drawn to these things.
Yeah.
And most things in life, and this is what we can talk about now, whether it's our personal development as leaders or our organization's development becoming healthier, comes down to some pretty unsexy things that we do over time that amount to simple disciplines.
Yeah, that's what I'm so curious to make you make the connection now to organizational health and maybe even strategy, Pat, of how does this idea carry over for leaders inside of an organization?
You know, from the very beginning when we started the table group, I remember sitting down with CEOs. We were pitching our ideas. We had no books, no like brand credibility or anything like that. And you almost have to anticipate their objections and say, there is no silver bullet. There is no silver bullet. Because what they're looking for is, how can you make my organization just much better and give us a competitive advantage? And what we'd always say, you're not going to find that in finance or technology or marketing. There's things you can do to improve. But it really is going back to the fundamentals and the foundation of your company, which is your leadership team. And are you honest with each other? And do you know how to argue well? And do you trust each other? And do you hold each other accountable? And it's so easy for somebody to go, oh, that sounds hard and messy and I don't want to do that. Give me some new financial solution. And we'd have to say to them up front, if you're looking for something that's overnight and you're looking for something that's super sophisticated, this is not going to be that. And the other one is just like, hey, answer these six questions and make sure that everybody on your team is on the same page. And they're like, but that can't possibly be it.
Yeah.
And we had to constantly remind them, you're not going to be impressed by this. It's just going to work.
I love that, Pat. I think that does go back to sort of the novel idea. Like imagine saying, well, Pat, you wrote The Advantage, you know, 15 years ago. What's your new thoughts on how you create a healthy organization? You know, as if there's, or I love our friend Dave Ramsey. If you listen to his radio show, he's just saying the same advice because it's true. You know, it's like he doesn't have to think of a new way for you to get out of debt. He just has to keep saying this is the way over and over again. And there's a certain, I love when you connected it to ego because it really is related to ego if you think it needs to be something new.
You know, I love that you mentioned Dave Ramsey because I was thinking about this too. I love listening to his show. And it's really because I'm interested in the different people that come on who Dave gives the same advice to in unique ways and how they react to it. It's not that he's like, okay, everybody, for the last 6 months, I've been telling you not to go into debt. Now I have this other plan. Here's what you need to do. He's like, I'm going to keep telling you the simple truths. And you know, the best pastors, the best teachers, they stick to that which is simple and true, but they customize it to the person and where they are. And that's why Dave Ramsey is so effective, because everything he says works. He just explains it in different ways to people based on where they, what they're going through.
And Pat, you know, we have one leader, CEO, who's adopted organizational health. And on the whiteboard in his office, he has the four disciplines, you know, that we talk about on this podcast. And every time a problem comes to him, he actually tries to physically write which of the quadrants does this problem belong in, you know? Mm-hmm. And it'd be so tempting to say like, oh, this is a new thing. This is a new problem that falls outside of these things. And you know, I even say that as we, every team we go into and work with, we go back to these fundamental truths about how you build a healthy organization. We're not changing the script. It sort of feels like a live version of Dave Ramsey, where we have a different business with a, what they think is a different problem. And we have the same solution for all of it is, hey, get healthy on your leadership team, create clarity, communicate that clarity, and then reinforce it. And they're like, oh, okay, now what do we do? It's like, keep doing those four things over and over and over again.
Right. And is it, do you want to be stimulated, and do you want to be entertained, or do you want it to work? And that's why we talk about in the motive, it's like, if you really want to lead your organization and make it successful, do the simple things. If you want to be self-entertained and distracted, find the latest trend, because you're going to keep needing them.
Pat, I was just going to ask you about that, because I think it's hard. It's hard work to do those four disciplines of org health, just like it's hard work to sweat every day and eat vegetables. Do you think it gets easier? Do those disciplines of org health get easier? Or is it something where leaders who have been doing that for years and years or decades still have to kind of wake themselves up and lace up their running sneakers in the morning?
Well, I think it does get easier. It never gets easy. But I think once you get used to that, you realize this is what I do. I think in marriage, it's like, no, you have to be selfless. You have to put the other person's interest ahead of your own. Over time, does that get easier? Yes. But every time you do it, you have to commit to doing it. So I think it gets easier. What I think it's interesting when we say this is hard work, it doesn't work because it's hard work, because you can do the wrong things. You can do hard work that doesn't work. And sometimes I think we have almost a martyr syndrome where we say anything that's hard work must be good. That's not true. But the corollary does apply. Anything that's good is probably going to involve hard work. So it's not the embracing of hard work for the sake of it being difficult. It's doing the right thing and sticking with it. And over time, it gets a little less difficult.
I love that.
You know, Samuel Johnson, the great writer, once said, people need to be reminded more than they need to be instructed. And I love that quote. I think the most important thing we need in life is reminders. And yet the world values people coming up with novel new things. And it's good that we have novel new things, but 95% of what we need in life is reminders about that which we know works. And I think that's a great point to keep in mind.
I think that as a leader, it's also tempting to want to create novel and immediate and easy things for our team. When we want to be able to have a new way to say the mission, or maybe we've been talking about the same mission statement for 3 years and it feels a little worn and we're tired of saying it over and over and over. And so it's appealing to think about what's going to be the new thing, what's going to be the catchy thing. And I've heard you say this before of, you know, they still just need to keep hearing the same mission. They might need to hear a new story about it. They might need to hear a new example or something fresh about it. But the work that's in front of you as a leader, you might be tempted to try to make it sound more novel or immediate, when the reality is you're leading people towards something that is probably difficult and good.
Right. Simple and difficult beats is more likely than complex and easy. You know, you know what I was thinking about? I think one of the reasons why people do this, I think it's because of the nature of media, and that is we like to do short stories about people that don't go into the full understanding of why they're great. Whether you're looking at the best companies, the best sports teams, the best artists, the best musicians, we tend to look at the last thing they did and we think, oh, they're great because of this one little thing they did. They changed their offense, or they drafted this one player, or they implemented this software, or they wrote this one song. And what you don't realize is the best musician, artists, teams, companies are really good at the fundamentals, and they spend most of their time focusing on those. And so that musician that we think, and I've done this before, I've written a couple songs, like I could write a song like that. Yeah, but the person who wrote that song, they studied music for years and they mastered it and they really understood it. And we all want to kind of cut in line and mm-hmm. we want to be the musician that never studied music or the artist that never learned to paint fruit, you know, and then do some abstract art or the sports team, the guy that buys the sports team drafts the one player who's going to make them the, and it's never one player. Mm-hmm. And the same is true in our organizations. The reason why the best companies in the world are great is because for years they've been sticking to their knitting. And then when they do that really cool novel thing, it's like a cherry on top, but we tend to look at that and go, just give me the cherry. And it's never just that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. And you're totally right, Pat. The media, it's sort of like the cut scene in the movie Rocky lasts 90 seconds. But in real life, you know, I've heard someone say this, like, but in real life, that might be 9 years or, you know, many, many years of just like putting in the work. And then people see the success on the other end or, oh, we're a great company or, oh, you're a great leader. And they think it happened overnight. And so it's absolutely true. I love if you were to name this podcast the opposite. So it'd be like, beware of novel, easy, and immediate. You could say, you know, stay with the proven, semi-difficult, and long-term stuff, you know, like that's another way to look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the thing about Rocky, the montage in movies. It's like the first 45 minutes of the movie, there's a struggle. There's a 90-second montage and then everything happens. And we got to love living in the montage because I really think the coolest part of Rocky was how he would wake up every day and swallow those eggs and go on that run. The victory lies in the day-to-day of doing that. And and I think that we have to learn to embrace that. And then the success becomes an outcome as opposed to the only reason we do it.
Mm-hmm. And then you have become the kind of resilient person who can sit there and be more patient and who is willing to be uncomfortable, right? That I love what you said earlier, Cody. We are... Every day we are becoming the person that we are becoming. And so those daily choices in our health and in our leadership are informing who we're going to show up to work with tomorrow and in 10 years.
That's right. And I think that's the point of today's podcast. And I think we're done. Hey, we have an unpaid ad today. I think it falls on Cody and Bo. What do you got for us?
I first want to point out that the devotees of our podcast will notice there's an Oxford comma in the title. So I feel vindicated. Thank you. You can send your hate mail to Cody@tablegroup.com.
Thank you. Oh,
but tell us the truth. Tell us the truth. What did you do this week?
Yeah. And then if I'm going to come clean, I was writing this week and I did not use the Oxford comma in several occasions. And I thought, I'm a hypocrite.
There it is.
So
we finally come to the conclusion that there are times when the Oxford comma is necessary, like in today's title. I'll admit that. Mm-hmm. And there are other times that it is silly.
Yeah, it just feels unnecessary. Okay, unpaid ad today is, I actually feel like it's kind of related to this topic. It's from my favorite pair of socks, which is Darn Tough Socks. And as you were talking about this, Pat, I just thought, you know, it's kind of a humble thing to say, we're just going to make really good socks. And I don't really know very much about this company, but I love these socks. I can't wait to do my laundry to where I get to wear them again. I don't know if you have a pair of socks like that, but nothing particularly fancy about them. They are just... Darn Tough Socks.
Is it lifetime Darn D-A-R-N or D-A-R-N-E-D?
D-A-R-N. D-A-R-N. Did that help? D-A-R-N.
Yeah, because darned, I thought, you know, it plays off you darn socks. Yeah. You know what's interesting about that? I love that. I'm going to go get some of those. People will say like, oh, that's not a very sexy business. I was at a conference last week and this company that makes like the icing for some of the largest donut manufacturers, and they make sprinkles, toppings, and icing. For donuts. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds cool. And they go, oh, that's not a very sexy business. And I said, what is a sexy business?
Right.
Every business comes down to doing certain things. And so making socks or making icing, it's like, do you really think cloud software, like they're jumping around and bouncing off the walls? This is so much fun. People think that high tech is more interesting or anything like that. Every business is unsexy and potentially sexy if you love it and you do it well. And so Darn Tough Socks, we're going to go out and get some of those. I love it. Thank you, Bo. Mm-hmm. And thank you for listening to the At the Table podcast. We love hearing from you, and we'll talk to you next time. God bless.